All right. Hello, hello. Welcome to JavaScript Jam. We're going to be joined by Nikki T in a little bit. He is finishing up a stream right now, but looks like we got my fuzzy friend came to hang out. What's up, man? Go ahead and throw you an invite if you want to join. I should share our newsletter. I think you'll get a kick out of this one. My headline was the AHA Stack Astro HTMX and Alpine. Quite the combo, right? I have only ever used Alpine very sparingly, but remember it was pretty hyped up back in the day, a couple years ago. I feel like I heard about Alpine a lot. Not so much anymore, but it seems well aligned for a stack like this, because it was more of the not super into JavaScript kind of thing. Looks like we got Fuzzy up here. What's up, man?
Waka waka, bro. How you all doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Shattered. I have just came back from like San Diego for the Linux Foundation's All Hands Retreat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God, dude.
How many people show up to something like that? Like, how big is the Linux Foundation?
Oh, it was huge. There was like 300 people there. And
That's
like we
tight.
had like 900, we like reached maximum occupancy right at the resort that they had us at, right, which was like this little golf resort just outside San Diego. Absolutely stunning, like put together fantastically, right? But it's like I learned more about the LF than what was put out there. It's like my complete re-understanding of the organization has completely changed. Hell, dude, I was like sitting there like the second row, right? Well, Jim Zemlin was giving his keynote presentation on Monday morning. It was insane. I was like, literally, that was like the
What are some of
insane.
your big takeaways in terms of things you learned or perspectives that were shifted?
Perspectives that were shifted probably be where I would like to start on that one. That's a great question, Anthony. Like the size and scope of the LF, like the Linux Foundation, is just more broader and the reach is far greater than I thought originally. It's like they deal with the top 5% of open source projects, which literally brings 96% of like open source value as the top 5% of the projects. If you think of open source, it's got an inverse logarithmic long tail kind of curve, right? Where is the number of projects is vast, but the number of adoptions, right, is like it kind of skews towards the top 5% of projects in open source. And these are ones that are rapidly used by enterprise, and these are the ones that are they, put underneath the foundation so that way they can actually have standards put towards them, like funding brought towards them, events, things like that, to basically garner support for the projects, and not only that, to keep the viability of these projects going forever, kind of sense. The Linux Foundation, in a sense, dude, is like the janitors of open source. That's what we
Yeah,
are.
very thankless, but absolutely essential job. Is
Hell yeah,
that
hell yeah, hell yeah. I mean, it's like there's so
the
many different parts and divisions to it, right? That when it all comes together, it's like it is a juggernaut that is set up to help projects in open source to be sustainable, be maintainable, and be like, there for users in the future. It's
Hey.
really interesting.
Awesome. So we got Nikki T up here. We also got Becca as well. Super excited to have both of you. I'm glad to have Fuzzy up here as well because we're going to be talking open source and
Yes.
open sourced. We've had Brian, the CEO of the show, on back in the day, but now he has a whole team of people. So Nick, why don't you introduce yourself and then Becca can go after.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, thanks for having us on and nice to see you, Fuzzy. Yeah, so my name is Nick Taylor. I am currently a senior software engineer over at OpenSauced, and we're a small team, but we're having fun and we're building out what I think is cool stuff that it will be helpful for people in the open source ecosystem.
Hey, I am Becca. I am a teammate of Nick's. I am the developer experience lead over at OpenSauced. And so do a lot of writing, speaking, education, and the occasional code comes into play there sometimes. I also am part of the virtual coffee community.
Yeah, virtual coffee. You should give a little pitch for that.
All right, I can do that. So virtual coffee, we've been doing it since April of 2020, which is when COVID hit and I lost my first dev job. So I said, does anybody want to meet up for virtual coffee? And so we've been going ever since. We meet up twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays to chat about usually tech-related things, because most of us are in tech. We're in all different stages, but we also do other things, like we have lunch and learn sessions. We have what we call coffee table groups, which are small interest groups of people coming together to learn about something new or to help provide accountability for each other. And we have a newsletter, podcast, YouTube channel. We try and do all of the things, I feel like.
Very cool. Yeah, and if anyone wants to drop links and whatnot, feel free to do so. We can put them up on the Jumbotron for our audience. And yeah, so yeah, I first heard of virtual coffee because one of my coworkers, my very first job, Lucia, was a virtual coffee member, and it seems like a very cool community. If I remember, it was kind of like a invite thing. It's like, you know, if people can apply to be in it. Is that kind of correct?
Yeah, so right now we have a waitlist, virtualcoffee.io/join. I'll try and drop that link, but we're right now, the waitlist is really short, so we've managed to get lots of people in, and we're hoping to open up membership pretty soon. But I would say, like, hey, if you want to join, definitely sign up for that waitlist. You'll get in really quickly. So we just love having new people around.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
Cool. So go ahead, Nick.
No, I was going to say, that's how I actually met Becca. So at the start of the pandemic, you know, when everybody was in lockdown, and I was still working at Dev2, and I met her. I responded to her in like a code newbie thread when they used to do the code newbie Twitter kind of like threads, or I forget,
like a Twitter chat.
Yeah, Twitter chat. Sorry, thank you. And yeah, that's how I met her. I was like one of the first people going to virtual coffee, and we've known each other since then. And then like we're like best buddies now, and then we're also coworkers now, and it's like super cool. And just a note about the Becca was mentioning the wait list. We didn't used to have that, but the thing is, the community got a lot larger, and it's all volunteer based, like including myself, Becca, and many other people. So we went with the invites because we wanted to be able to scale at a pace that like the volunteers could support the new people. It's not to gatekeep, like say, you know, oh, now you're VIP, you can come in. It's really just that, because it is all volunteer based.
I think there's also a certain extent too. It's like, you want people who want to be there, you know, because some people, they're just like, oh, I want a job. I'm supposed to join a community. What community should I join? And it's like, well, you know, you should join a community because you want to contribute to the community and, like, you know, actually participate in it. So I think, you know, like, that's having some sort of barrier, you know, isn't necessarily always a bad thing, as long as you say, it's not gatekeeping, it's not like an exclusionary thing. I think that's, you know, totally within a community's right to do something like that.
Yeah. And it kind of ties into like what we're going to talk about, open source, because like, you know, like you can definitely like, you know, it's always welcome to get contributions in open source, whatever they are, but you know, there's a common thing, and I'll let the others speak to this too, but like people always ask me, like, what do I contribute to? Like, I don't know what to contribute to. And I always give the same answer, and it's, chances are, at least like I've been doing a lot of stuff in the front end space, but also like, just like when I was at Netlify, it was more like CLI and Node stuff and like Dino, but that's all like open source stuff. And I just kind of, the stuff I contribute to is stuff I'm interested in or I use. Like I started contributing to Dev2 because I signed up and I started blogging there. And then I ended up becoming the first contributor outside of the core team, because they said, hey, is anybody interested in open source? And I liked the product and I wanted to make it better. And that's what kept me hooked on dev too. And I mean, it was definitely cool to start working there eventually because of my open source work. But I do have to always caution, like, just because you do stuff in open source doesn't mean you're guaranteed a job, but it's definitely a pathway to potentially land a role, whether it's for that particular project or just other, because, and again, I'll let the others speak to this too, but it's just like everything's in the open. People see how you interact with people. Like the code is like definitely a part of it, or whether that's documentation or building out a site or some service. But like the big thing is really how do you communicate with people? Like, you know, obviously there's no product without any code or service, but like for me, like the interactivity between people in the community is like a big thing on like, yeah, you know, that person is pretty awesome. You know, I would definitely hang out with them. And then there's other people, it's like, oh, they came in, they said this was terrible, fix it, you know, like that's probably somebody I would never hire, you know? So like, anyways.
For sure. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned, you know, people asking and wanting to, you know, get involved in open source. And my go-to was always check out OpenSauced. Fuzzy, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just wanting to pick up on what Nick was saying. Nick, how you doing, bruv? Loving your work recently. Also, Becca, pleasure to meet you. I support DevRails.
Is your first time meeting? That's awesome.
Yeah, for real.
Fuzzy is a good one, let me say.
Appreciate that, dude. What I was about to say was, like, when it comes to, like, communities, and this came from Astros, like, what I've realized was people can either be one of two things when they're part of a community. They could either be part of it or they could be a part of it, if you get me. They either stand separate or they stand within, kind of thing. Or, you know, it's a small minutiae of a detail, but when you recognize where they stand in relation to the project, it's like you could build bridges to bring them in if you want, or alternatively, you could just respect their distance equally, right? Or respect their input. It's one of those, the devil's in the detail. But in terms of like people jumping into open source and into communities, it's like there was that video that was posted by Theo, I think it was last week, about you shouldn't really get, you know, contribute directly to open source with the intention that, you know, this is going to help you build a job. Get involved in open source. Open source is one of those things where you could like contribute not just through code base, but augmented documentation, talking about the projects that you're passionate about, sharing, you know, information and communicating what your ambitions are about things, and just really being part of the narrative. Being, you know, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the precipitate, and that is really the heart of like how I feel like people should act when it comes to open source. There's that many things going on, and it's not all about code. I think if we just focus on the code side, the development side, we isolate and pigeonhole people very easily and very quickly. But yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to bounce off for a couple of minutes, but we'll be listening.
Oh, good, man. You're welcome to join anytime. Yeah, I think I found the tweet you were talking about and just pinned it. This is a classic Theo tweet that can like seem a little aggro, but I think it's actually got a good message in it. He's basically saying like, if you're really mercenary about it and just like opening, as he says, randomly filing pull requests in projects you don't use. That's a great way to put like that spray and pray approach that some people bring to this kind of thing. Whereas like you want to dig into something, you want to use something, you want to become familiar with it, and then you can really make some contributions to it. And what Fuzzy was saying, you know, it doesn't even need to be code. You know, I've told my story a million times on JavaScript Jam, and most people know I kind of got my start just devreling for open source. You know, I was doing things like this, hosting spaces and doing podcasts and writing content. And, you know, that's one of the things I really appreciate about Becca. Like, you write so much content, and, like, you ship a ton of content. And What are some of the things that you've written recently? Because I know you're always shipping stuff. So why don't you kind of share some of that?
I have to laugh because I'm getting ready to start a 29 days of open source alternative series. It starts tomorrow. So I'm going to be shipping a blog post every day and I think 12 shorts maybe. So nothing. I've done nothing, not even in grad school like this before. So I'm going to push it to the limit. But I did drop a post yesterday. I wasn't planning on writing it because I'm working on drafting these 29 posts, right? But like, I have ADHD and my brain said, you're not allowed to draft anything until you draft this post because it's...
I saw that tweet and I was waiting for what it was going to be.
I forgot about the tweet. Let me see if I can post the reply here. Yeah, here we go. So it is called Stop Burning Out Maintainers, an Empathetic Guide for Contributors. There's going to be a follow-up post for this that kind of looks at it from the opposite perspective, but that's not going to come until March because I've just got too much to do otherwise. But like the idea is that, you know, it kind of was inspired by one of Theo's, maybe his videos, talking about people need to stop telling other people to contribute to open source, which I don't generally agree with, but I, looking at it from the perspective of like, okay, we have maintainer burnout for sure is a problem. And we need open source to be sustainable, and it can't be sustainable if we're burning out our maintainers. And so a lot of this can be, some of this can be rectified if contributors practice being good open source citizens. And so it kind of breaks down, like, here are the different ways that you can do that. Like basics, I'll just go through like a couple of the headings. Read the directions, check your work, be a problem solver, communicate appropriately, and don't make demands. So like there's lots of different steps in there, but I think that, you know, if we do these things, it's going to decrease maintainer burnout because, you know, you don't want to wake up in the morning and not want to look at your GitHub notifications because you know there's going to be a contributor in there that is just really exhausting you. That's just the absolute opposite of what we need. And I think part of that comes with educating contributors. And the other part of it comes from, you know, contributors really taking the initiative to make sure that they're able to participate in a way that is useful to open source in general.
Yeah, I see in this section, like be a problem solver, you have actually like a whole checklist full of really, really great advice for people. It's just like, you know, check for, you know, Google your error messages. Like, have you read the documentation? Like, have you checked for typos? You know, and this is something that I think, you know, it seems so basic, but since we're really gearing this towards, we're telling people to do this to get a job. So there's an implicit thing. It's like, they're probably a junior, you know, they may not have done a lot of this, and to just say, you know, go figure it out. Like, that's not very useful, but like a guide like this with like a specific, like you need to check all these boxes. That's like so, so helpful for people.
Yeah.
I hope so. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, it definitely having a guide like this is great. I do think there is some onus on the maintainers of a project too, in the sense that if possible, automate a lot of these things that, you know, can basically, you know, because part of the thing to remember when you're in open source is most of the interactions are asynchronous through issues and pull requests. And you want to avoid that, like, I tried this, it didn't work. What else did you try? And, you know, back and forth like that. Or like, but there's like a lot of stuff that you can put in place to prevent a lot of those questions or like, why am I getting this? And it's like, you know, there's typical things that are kind of like table stakes for a lot of projects now, like linting and, you know, make, you know, if you're using TypeScript, you know, you can prevent a bit.
What do we think of pre-commit hooks?
Oh, yeah. I know people, some people hate them. I am pro them. And I know Theo has strong opinions about not liking them, but like in open source, at least when I was at Dev too, I was pretty much the only front end for like a year and a half. Like, and all I had on my brain all the time was like code-based maintenance. And so for me, like having those hooks in place was, yeah, I see Dev giving the thumbs down.
Okay, thumbs down. I threw Dev an invite if he wants to come defend his decision.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I think, I guess if you want to give a level-headed approach, if stuff you have put in place is actually slowing people down a lot, then maybe not. But from my usage of them, I've never had like slow issues or anything. And I know people can say like, well, I need to get this in. I need to ship this. And, you know, I'm getting a lint error, or the TypeScript type isn't, you know, it's giving an error, you know, and like, obviously.
Can you dig into this? Because, you know, this is like a really technical thing, but I think we have a technical audience. So what would you include in like a canonical pre? What do you think is a good thing to actually have happen in the pre-commit? You know?
Yeah. So stuff like prettier for sure. Like, and I run that on all the files that make sense, including Markdown. You can obviously prevent some from being treated with these things. Like, you don't want to run like prettier on your package.json or package lock or your bun lock file, because that's like binary, but like a yarn lock. You don't want it running on stuff like that because it's just not necessary. And when you install something, it just gets updated automatically. But
yeah, your package manager should do that, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I would definitely, like, because most people are using Markdown, especially if you're an open source. So I would just run prettier on Markdown. I would run prettier on like JS, TS, TSX files, like, or whatever framework you're using, if it's svelte files or whatever.
Yeah, that's pretty lightweight, because that's just like formatting. Yeah. And I think, you know, with Dev and Theo, I think they're arguing more so, and you know, I don't want to speak for them too much, just like, you don't want to be making large modifications to the code. Is that kind of your thought, Dev?
Yeah.
Wait, are we still talking about pre-commit hooks?
Yeah, yeah. I'll just correct, mention yes. Something else before Dev speaks, though. Like, the only other thing I include is I run tests, but only on the affected files. So it's not running all the tests. And if you use something like Jest or Vtest, you can actually say, like, only run the tests associated to these files. And for sure you can, and you know, and there's a whole lot of conversation about running these things on CI, but that we can talk about too. But I just wanted to, that's pretty much the main things I use in a pre-commit hook. And I'll let Dev go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't really have much to say. I'll just say that I try to do most checks and like linting stuff in my IDE or in the CI. Other than that, like, I just don't like things blocking when I'm trying to push. Like, if I can do it in my IDE,
you know to do those things. What about people who don't know to do those things?
Yeah,
I don't know. I would hope that if like my teammates would have like the prettier VS Code extensions installed, so that while they're working on it, they can see those things immediately and not have to wait for like
running commands. This is really interesting, because I think it's about context. Like, are we talking about the context of a professional team, or are we talking about the context of an open source project that anyone can contribute to?
That's fair. Yeah, I haven't worked on too many like direct open source projects, so that's a big gap in my experience, I would say.
Yeah, that's where I would make the argument for pre-commit hooks. It's one thing, like because I've worked at places like, even though like back in the day before VS Code was kind of like a standard thing. Like, I started using it, but they said, no, we all use JetBrains WebStorm, so you got to use that, you know? And so like all the tooling was uniform, so like you didn't have to worry about this. But in the case of an open source project, chances are most people are using VS Code, but there's definitely people using Vim or like other editors. And there's no way to guarantee that they're configured to do all the things that you were talking about here. And that's why I think they're important. And I get back to the maintainability of the code, because like, obviously, like something not being formatted correctly is not going to affect a production release. But over time, like these things add up. Like, it took me a year and a half to get rid of lint errors at Dev2. I literally created this open issue, which was like this overarching issue. And I just started creating issues, and people like me and the community, it took literally like a year, like, cause I didn't enable it by default, but I just said like, it would give warnings until we get rid of them all. And then once we finally got rid of them all, I, you know, battened down the hatches and I put it to like error if any lint errors happen. And again, that might seem like a trivial thing, but it's like, the maintenance and the uniformity of things, like, I just think it makes sense. And especially when you don't know what people's environments are. So.
Yeah, I can imagine that in kind of like an open source context, you would want the person who's contributing and you like just use their resources instead of running a CI every single time someone contributes.
Okay, so we're about 30 minutes in and we have not said yet what is open source, I don't think. So why don't we like do a baseline, like what is this thing? Either Becca, Nick, or both. You can both give your kind of pitch for it if you want.
I'll ask if you want to, Becca, if you want to go ahead. I can definitely do it as well, but I feel like you'll probably explain it better, even though I work on the product.
No, that's fine. So open source is a product that's meant to empower everybody that's involved in open source. Whether you're a contributor, a maintainer, or a team, we are creating tools that provide insight into the process so you can dig a little deeper and understand, like, how healthy is the project, or how healthy is my involvement in open source as a contributor? And so it really allows you to kind of see like what's going on in these projects, what's going on with contributors, and how can we create a healthy ecosystem with that knowledge?
Awesome. Do you want to add to that, Nick? What I always heard Brian say, because he's done this before, he used to build Yelp for X. So he once built Yelp for churches. And he said, this is like Yelp for open source. He probably doesn't use that pitch anymore. But back in the day, he used to say that.
Yeah, I mean, I think like, I like to think of it. I really like screenplays and screenwriting. My brothers and I used to write a lot together. And it's like similar to IMDb, right? Like you can look at movies, you can look at companies on IMDb.
Ooh, I like that.
You can learn about it, but you can also learn about like the individual actors. Where are they acting? Like what other movies are they in? Like do those movies have good ratings? So like you're able to get all of this knowledge and information that just helps you to have a broader understanding of all that. So
that's much better than Yelp actually, because like you're saying with the actor comparison. So this is something that is not just useful for projects, it's useful for individuals as well.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. And I linked to our docs that give an explainer on what open source is. I think because I'm on desktop, I can't pin it to the Jumbotron. And when I know when you're on mobile, you can pin
it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Becca did a great job
explaining. Wait, how are you speaking if you're on desktop?
I'm using the Twitter in my browser.
You can do that now?
Yeah, it's been like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm on.
A couple months ago.
Yeah. I'm picturing Anthony in a corner holding his phone.
I am. I had no idea this was a thing. I've been out of it the last couple months, apparently. Wow.
Yeah, I don't know when they added it, but it's definitely.
No wonder all your audio sounds so clean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I've got my background noise stuff, AI stuff on, because like I have a contractor here right now literally hammering cement, which you can't hear, I don't think. So shout out to crisp.ai. But not that they're sponsoring anything, but it's really good. But yeah, to Becca's point, we really do want to empower people, whether that's maintainers or teams. And like you were alluding to, Anthony, as well, you can use it as a place to showcase what you've been working on. You know, like, you know, people are, you know, if they're proud of some work they did, they can create a highlight. They have they can create their own profile. There's like a dev card you can share. There's other things you can do too. And like, we obviously have a paid tier as well for like enterprise or paying customers, but like for somebody who's just interested in the platform, go ahead, check it out. You can have like a profile as an individual, and you can create some lists if you want to track some people, for whatever reasons, like maybe people you're interested in the framework ecosystem, you could create a list and see what they're up to. You can, there's some newer work. This is more related to paying customers, but this is kind of because you were asking me the other day about like some technical stuff I was working on. And myself, I've been focused mainly on the front end. Like that's pretty much what I'm doing at Open Source right now, because we're a very small engineering team. And, you know, we're all full stack, but like
what is the stack? I'm assuming React and GraphQL still. Is GraphQL still in there?
No, I mean there's GraphQL in the sense that you're hitting the GitHub API, but the stack is Next.js. We're still using the Pages router. We're using Tailwind, TypeScript. We use Nest.js for our API.
I don't know if you know this, but do you know the project OneGraph? It doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah, they got acquired by Netlify.
Yeah. This whole thing was built on OneGraph with like just B Dougie and Sean just like pair coding like 4 years ago.
Yeah,
it was all GraphQL.
Yeah, no, it's a REST API now, and aside from the Sad and face. We use we use the GitHub API, but we're using it as a REST API. But like, it's all REST. Tailwind, like I mentioned, we're using Radix for components. Shad CN stuff's pretty neat. I pulled in some stuff where we're using some table in the process of updating some stuff in the app, but like some of the tables in the application aren't really responsive because they're divs. So some of the new stuff I've done, it's actually old school HTML tables, but CSS is so much better these days that they actually look good.
No more floats.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But yeah, the big work I've been working on has been this workspaces feature, and it's comes with a UI refresh as well. Like if folks have already been to OpenSauced, you have like a top navigation with the workspaces. And to be clear, some of the stuff I mentioned is for like enterprise or paying customers, but individuals, like once we flick the switch on for this, because it's behind a feature flag right now, everybody's going to get a personal workspace. And so you can still do the stuff you were doing in OpenSauced. I think for individuals, it'll just look more like a UI refresh, but they will have a workspace.
This is a question for both you guys. If someone was like getting started, like I go to your repo, I see there's like app.opensauced, hot.opensauced, api.o. There's like a lot of links. Like, how should someone get started in this journey? Should they just like go to the dashboard and like log in?
Yeah. Definitely creating an account. But I might let Becca speak to some of this because we have a bunch of repositories that help people to kind of onboard into open source. Like they're open source repositories, but we have these paths to help people kind of onboard to start, because there's a lot of people that are coming into open source for the first time. So we have some kind of paths to help people there. I don't know if you want to speak to that, cool. Becca.
Yeah, I'd love to learn more about that. Yeah.
Sure. So one of the things that like we've spend a lot of time thinking about deliberately planning this contributor journey, because we want to be able to empower people to contribute to open source. And like we were talking about earlier, like one of the big things and the big challenges is maintainer burnout. We have a lot of people that everyone's saying like, go contribute to open source. And so like you were talking about the spray and pray method. And so there are repositories out there that are open to beginners and are friendly to doing more mentoring or handholding through the process. And so I think it's important to remember that there are some repositories where it's fine just to contribute once and move on, because the purpose is to contribute once and move on. And that's kind of what we have started here. So we have an intro to open source course that we have. And in chapter 5, it walks you through how to get your first contribution. That's to our repository called the Guestbook. And now that's done through a CLI tool. So there's not even that much that you have to do other than use the commands that are laid out for you in the course. And so that's kind of like step one, just to get people a little bit, like get their feet wet, toes wet, what is the expression? I'm like so bad at it, at those.
Feet wet, yeah.
We can go with wet toes. We can do wet toes, I guess.
Wet toes, get their wet toes. And then if they want to get their knees wet, they move over to the Pizzaverse repository. So this is another like kind of fun repository just to help people get into the understanding of how do you clone a project? What does it mean to fork? What's writing a good commit message? And basically there's three issues that are pinned to the top of the repository that are like, add a fun fact about pizza, add a pizza recipe. There's another pizza related thing, but I think we're going to expand that because Not everybody has pizza in their country. So we want to like make it a little bit more culturally inclusive. Yeah, I think there was somebody that told me that they didn't know what pizza was. And it like, I, you know, 5 years
That's
ago.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. Someone saying they don't know what pizza is.
Opensauce.curry.
5 years ago. Yeah. Nick is going to add poutine pizza on there for Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
But so you're just like all of these things, right, to try and make it an inclusive space. So that's kind of like our beginner friendly thing. And from there, we have issues usually in the docs repository or in the app or one of our other ones that have a beginner or good first issue or beginner friendly or something like that, where we try and make it really detailed and structured so people can continue on that path. But so like we're very, we try very hard to make that a path that everyone can kind of follow and grow through that, and hopefully in a really gentle way. You know, of course, like it's going to be challenging because anytime you're learning something new, it's hard. But once you've done it a handful of times and you start to get used to the process, it becomes easier along the way.
Yeah. And a side note, Dev was talking about curry, but like there's a lot of really good Indian, well, there's a lot of all kinds of Montreal where I'm at is super multicultural and so much great food. And I've actually had butter chicken pizza and it's amazing.
What the fuck?
Yeah. It's really good. So just throwing that out there. Maybe I'll post instead of a poutine one, I might put a butter chicken pizza in the pizzaverse.
That's so great. I feel like I think all this just goes back to the TLD, like the dot pizza domain. It's just, it has such a pull.
Sorry, I just want to say, Dev, we have chicken tikka masala pizzas here in Glasgow, bro.
Oh, nice. Another reason to go to Scotland.
Now, another reason not to go to Scotland. What do you mean? That doesn't sound good. That sounds hard. Why would I want to try that?
I don't know.
It's amazing.
Gotta be open-minded,
man.
You have no idea.
It's so good.
I haven't had lunch, and all this pizza talk is like, I feel like just walking out the door after this and going to get some butter chicken pizza.
My partner actually got some Indian food for lunch and got me some. It's in the fridge waiting for me.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right, I guess I gotta try some of this
Indian
cuisine pizza at some point.
It's called multiculturalism.
yeah. I love it when there's fusion food. Like what else about, well, this one's not really fusion, but like buffalo chicken pizza is really good too, but that's not really fusion. That's
Yes, definitely.
But yeah.
Actually had them when I was in Italy. We had anchovies for the first time, and now we loved them. So we tried anchovies on pizza, which I know is like considered like a total faux pas for some people, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, I think I've had anchovies on pizza, but it's not like my go-to, but it doesn't taste terrible. But yeah.
Just reminds me, there's a Futurama episode where Fry wants to have anchovies, but anchovies have been extinct for like 500 years. And so he finds like the last can of anchovies that exists, and he puts them on the pizza, and everyone has it, and they're all like, oh, that's terrible. And he's like, yeah, you know, they grow on you, but that's the only can that was in existence.
Oh, man. Yeah. No, I see Toby's in the crowd there. Hey, Toby.
What's up, Toby? Yeah, and both you and I and possibly other people here have been invited to this big million launch party. So that's cool.
Yeah,
million 3.0.
Yeah, excited for that on Friday.
I haven't.
Oh, yeah, Toby, you got to get fuzzy in there. Otherwise, this Twitter space is going to get awkward real fast.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. That's why I left it open. I'm like, I'm sure with this group of people, I bet he invited someone else here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious for I'm happy to keep talking about OpenSauce, obviously, but I'm curious about like, because like Fuzzy, you have a pretty cool background. Like you were on the Astro Core team, and now are you at the Linux Foundation now? I can't remember where you've moved on to.
That's right. Yeah, he was just talking about he just met with the whole team.
Okay, it
was like a in person kind of conference.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, Fuzzy had told me a while ago he had to dip, but it seems like he's still here. So I'm not sure if you have bandwidth to speak. But also, we just got Toby up here as well. So I'd love to get just a tiny, tiny pitch on the Million 3 launch party, and then we can talk a little more open source, and then close that around the hour.
Yeah, cool. Sounds good.
Sorry, hi. Sorry about that, Nick. I was reconnecting to a better network just as when you were asking me a question there.
Yeah, so Nick was asking you about the Linux Foundation.
Yeah, so I've kind of like been involved with a small little group of friends, right? Working to help call the Security Knowledge Framework, right? Which is a great resource of tools, right, to help become somewhat better, you know, security aware. And so it's like this got, you know, brought underneath the LF body. We got scooped up into the process, and it's just been an amazing ride for the past year. So I've kind of like not been heavily as I should be involved with the Astral community. I had to take a step back from all those roles. But what we're looking to do at the LF is pretty much bring in tools to help train the future of developers, train a future of developers who are both, you know, security proficient, who are taught the best practices, and also able to use those skills in enterprise use cases. What I found is that there's a huge leap between what we do, like, and, you know, what we call like the open source communities in around the JavaScript ecosystem. We're often seen as the indie group, the independents, you know, as like the free radicals in a sense. And then there's enterprise and how those guys operate. There is a difference between the two, and it is a lot is mindset, a lot is, you know, proficiencies, and a lot is skills training. Because if you don't have those skills and you don't have them credited and, you know, able to display and certify, say, like, I'm certified in Kubernetes, you know, the Cloud Native Foundation, or sorry, Kubernetes, or where's the other one? Yeah, let's just pick Kubernetes, for example, right? Nobody's going to let you near their stack in enterprise. There's a number of different things that work against you. And it's one of those where we say, it's like, oh, you don't really need to go for certifications. I'm honestly in the school of thought now that certifications is important to the developer, as important to your open source contributions, if not, because those certifications is what's going to give companies the ability to say, listen, you're credible, you're competent, and you're not that much of a an insurance risk. You don't carry that. The risk factor of me hiring you goes lower because you have demonstrated and that you've got accreditations in this particular project. So that's what I'm kind of working on in the LF, but yeah.
Very cool. Do you want to follow up on that, Nick?
Oh, no, I was just saying that's cool. Because I wasn't sure. I can't remember when you left the Astro team, but I couldn't remember where you'd gone to. So it sounds cool what you've been up to. So.
Yeah, dude, honestly, like, can I just say, always bet on open source. Open sourced, right? Even.
Yeah.
It is, like, open source is an economic movement. It is not just specific to, you know, GitHub and the code, you know, repos. There is an action. If you were to look at it from 30,000 feet, you'd see a growing, vibrant culture where people are readily contributing and proactively engaging with different initiatives. It is as open as democracy can be in a virtual environment setting as well. It is more of an economic force and a movement than it is really just, like I say, GitHub and repos.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're really lucky where you're at, because, you know, I think people who have gotten into this, you know, maybe within the last 5 years or so, I think it's hard to understand just how important Linux was to open source. Like, we all think of, you know, GitHub and stuff, but like like Linux was the open source project that made open source important.
Yes, and it was what I would discovered when I was at the All Hands last week was really the history of it all. I was sitting next to Mike Rochester in Clyde Separate Speed, my boss and his boss, right, which was very funny and awkward. But I was just sitting there and they were telling me about, like, you know, how the LF came to be and how it started off with, like, you know, a group of 3 to a group of 12 to a group of 50. And, you know, it was like how they kept growing and then all of a sudden became this juggernaut that it is today. And juggernaut is a good way to describe it now because it is becoming the advocacy group that is meant to, is representing open source in the lobbies and around, you know, the EU and around the US government, helping to now influence some of the, you know, the narrative that applies to us, you know, developers in the open source communities. So, you know, it's like, it's really starting to become a juggernaut in that sense. And as I said to like Anthony earlier, it's like the Linux Foundation is one of like the janitor of open source in a sense. And you're right, dude, if it wasn't for Linux is a great project. It's huge, diverse. I mean, the amount of distros that are there is not just one operating system. Like, see it from 10,000 feet.
Yeah, and I think really just the idea of open sourcing an operating system itself, like that was it. Because if you can't own your operating system, like you don't own anything. Like you could build as much open source stuff you want. If it's built on a proprietary platform at the base layer, you never really know what you're doing. You never really know whether your code is doing what you want to do or not. Because like, and this is why, like, just with Microsoft, like, you were just praying that Microsoft wouldn't, you know, F you, and you're just like, okay, well, I hope they're not backdooring my entire system, but I don't know. And with Linux, you actually could have that kind of peace of mind.
Of course. And it was just there, is like, you hit it on the head. It was like, during, like, the 80s, 90s, there was a pushback towards proprietary code. Everything was proprietary code, and sometimes the license fees were just exorbitant to the cost where in order for me to be in business, I need to pay to maintain another business in a sense. And it was just becoming unfeasible. It was like, one can say probably the nature of open source would probably emerge if it wasn't for Linux, you know, but that's an argument for another multiverse, right? However,
yeah, no, this is a super, super interesting conversation, but I want to pivot. We got Toby up here and he hasn't gotten to speak yet. So Toby, introduce yourself. Tell us about Million 3.
Awesome. Hello everyone. Really awesome people in the house. Anthony, Becca, Nick, Dev, Andrea, Jason, and Jilaki. I see everyone here in the room. Very familiar faces. Yeah, excited for you guys to actually jam up with us on Friday by 8 p.m. PST. I hope I got that time right, dude. Yeah, and it's really late here for me still by that time. But yeah, Million version 3 is dropping on that day. And we have so many cool features coming in, and a lot of like factors and, you know, fixes as well in the major release. Yeah, definitely the compiler is you know, there's a lot of like new features like added to the compiler. It's more smarter now, and you know, rewrites and some limitations we had before using Million have been like overcome in the new release dropping. We have a linter as well, but I'm not going to say much on that because I wanted to actually experience that firsthand. And yeah, there's one really exciting feature, really exciting thing that's dropping as well. It's for the users of Million to see how much their performance have improved in a very massive way. That one, I'll probably say also put a cap on that so that you can see it firsthand as well. And yeah, a lot of like really other cool features that maybe I'm even thinking about right now, but most are centered around, you know, very cool like faster runtime to help your your applications, you know, run faster and everything. And I hope I'm not saying too much or too little. Well, yeah,
you've been sufficiently vague. Yeah, no, and I love this. So I want to try and pull all these threads together. So we got Toby here, Nick, and Becca. How would you pitch Toby on the value of open source for Million?
I think Becca might be tied up because I messaged her in Slack. But I think just like any other project, you can use it to. I mean, there's the individual aspect of open source, but I think as an open source project, you know, it could be valuable in the sense that you might want to track, like, you know, how many people have forked the repository, like, you know, some metrics on health, you know, like how many new contributors are there, how many returning contributors.
Then Millions, a project that's blown up all the time. So it sounds like just like helping with influx could be a thing.
Yeah. And it's, you know, like, you know, based on like, if you happen to be seeing like, oh, like, I don't know, like 50 new people contributed this week, you know, like, who are these people? And then you can kind of see what they're up to, you know, like, I think just seeing the health of the repository, like you can always go by like vibe driven statistics, I guess, but, it's good to see concrete numbers. Like when you have something like, okay, wow, we had, you know, we had 200 pull requests over the last 2 months and, or 30 days, you know, and like, they all got merged, or like a ton of issues got open and stuff got resolved, or, you know, because it's cool to see stars in repos, you know, and a lot of people go based on star driven like hype. And don't get me wrong, stars are a metric, but I don't think it's the only metric. And it's like,
it's the top level metric, but
yeah,
a top level metric is just like, it's like a company's stock, like a company's stock gives you information, but it certainly doesn't give you all the information.
Yeah, you know, and it doesn't guarantee that a project is amazing, but obviously, like, and the other thing too is you know, like, it can mean the project is amazing, but the other thing too is like, I was talking with B Dougie a while ago, our CEO, and it's like jQuery is pretty much, you know, they still ship new features, and it has like, I don't know how many stars it has.
jQuery 4. Yeah. It's coming.
But like, you know, like there could be projects that have been around there forever. And like, if you see like, okay, this project has like 60,000 stars, but like it, you know, maybe there's been no new stars in the past 5 years for whatever reason, you know, like you kind of want to see more current stats on things and get like a, like not so much granular, but like more realistic, like what's happened in the past 6 months on the project versus over.
I have a perfect example of this, actually. So I was checking out, there's this, the YouTube DL tool. It's like for downloading YouTube videos. It's like a CLI. Yeah. It's got like 100,000 stars, and it hasn't been updated in like 2 years. And there's a fork with half as many stars. And I tried both of them. The one with 100,000 stars, it took me about 10 minutes to download a YouTube video. And with the currently maintained project, it took 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So that's a perfect example. The stars would lead you in the wrong direction there.
Yeah, like in some cases, the stars are more historical than like actually what's happening, you know? I mean, obviously people can still star a repo, obviously. But yeah, I think a lot of them, like even, you know, like React or like Vue, like they've got like tens of thousands of stars. But it'd be interesting to see, because I don't know, but like, how many stars have they gotten this year, you know, or like in the last 3 months, you know, I mean, those are both healthy projects. So maybe that's a bad example, but unless you want to get spicy about React releases, but that's a whole other topic I don't want to get into now. but yeah, I think that's the main thing. It's kind of like, I kind of equate the stars thing to like, hey, yeah, man, we won the football championship in high school. Remember that? You know, we were champions, you know, and like, sure you were, but like, what's happening now that you're like 20 years older, you know, kind of, I don't know if that's a good analogy or not, but.
I think this is a very interesting conversation, and it seems like a lot of conversations have discussions have gone down around this. I probably listened to the recording yet to clarify, but yeah, you did make some very valid points there, Nick, and I agree with them. Yeah, sorry, Becca, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I had to step away from my from the space for a second to check dinner, and that's right when you asked me about this. But I think that Nick did a really good job talking about all of these things. And I dropped a link in there, so I created a million JS insight page real quick that you should be able to see. And so it just kind of gives you a little bit more data on what you're looking at. And so like one of the things that I see when I look at the contributors graph is we've got one person that is committing the majority of the code, right? And so one of the nice things about visualizations like this is, okay, you get to see like how many people, actually, I think I know some of those faces on there. Yeah, I do. I see Jeffrey in there. Anyway, you get to see, okay, like who are the people that are contributing here? And how often are they contributing? And like part of that is like if you see a decrease over time, then you know like, okay, there's an issue. Do I need to be doing something differently? Why is there an issue? And you think about things like the bus factor. So like the bus factor is if somebody gets hit by a bus, is it going to take out my entire project, right? Like I didn't make that up. I'm not the one that said it. So don't blame me for the terrible violent analogy. But like, if you look at this contributor graph here, we've got like one person that's making the majority of the commits, right? And so if something happens to that person, then what is going to happen to the project? And then it also lets you see, I also created a contributor chart. Like you can break down and look at those 21 contributors who have contributed to MillionJS in the last month. Where else are they contributing to? And it's interesting to see like, what are the connections? Who are they connected to? And if you wanna grow the project or if you wanna increase the health of your project, then who can you reach out to in that space? And that allows you to have a better reaching understanding of who your community is. And this is like kind of an aside, but like when I talk to people about trying to find a job in tech, I would tell them, like, remember, your network is not just the people you know. It's the people you know and who they know as well. And it's the same thing applies to open source. So if you are looking for help or support or you need somebody with a certain expertise, then you know all of these people and they know all of these projects and these other people there. So it just kind of allows you to understand things and then to also compare yourself to other projects as well. So like if you see that your PR velocity is pretty slow, which MillionJS isn't. You're 73%. So I would give you a thumbs up for that one.
killing the game.
But if you see that it goes from 73% now to, I don't know, 50% in a month or two, then you can ask yourself like, okay, what is the problem? Actually, you've gotten better. So I will say in a 3-month period, the PR velocity was 69%. And then in the last 30 days, it's 73%. So kudos to you for improving, but all of these things are part of open source health that you might not be thinking of because there's not another place where we see information like this.
You forgot to do the mic drop.
That was an awesome pitch. I love that you included the link even so we can check that out.
That was probably Becca. Can I just say something, right, just to like,
yeah, no, go for it, Fuzzy.
Help with the pitch a wee bit, right? The elevator pitch, you know, short, concise, and sweet. You give data-driven, you're basically providing data-driven approach to open source projects, delivering better insights into their projects and what they get through GitHub. And can I just ask a quick question to, like, either you or Nick, right? It's like, do you provide historic data in terms of like month on month in comparison between like different, you know, data points?
We recently this part isn't open source, but we're using a time series database now. And so
Which one?
I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say, but okay. I think it's
DM it to me. Yeah. I'm curious. You can keep it secret.
Yeah, I think there's hints to what it is in the code base, so it's probably not a big deal. But I'm just gonna cover my tracks just in case. But
no, you're good.
Yeah. So So basically, you can track pretty much anything, and it's in pretty much real time. Not all of this is in production yet, you know, it's definitely given a boost to us. I just got to mention, Becca's got to jump off. We have a meeting for API.
Yeah, I was going to say, if people have a hard stop at the hour, feel free to hop off. Anyone who wants to stay, we can keep chatting.
Yeah, I'll stay on for a few more minutes. I'm just going to let her know that I'll be in the meeting in a few minutes. So we have a time series database, and so this makes it nice with these time buckets where you can and again, like I said, not all this is in production yet, but some of it only might be on our beta, but you can get information really quickly, like real time data about GitHub. So like, you want to get metrics on the health, you know, like you can get it over 7 days, 30 days, 3 months. I don't know if we've done like a per day, I think that's what you're asking, Fuzzy, but if not, I'm pretty sure that stuff's all possible. Mm-hmm.
It was what I found when it came to like me, just like a use case, Nick, right, was when I was doing the Astro stuff, like this week in Astro, getting the weekly data, and I was having to like store it like myself,
okay,
each week, just so that way, you know, I could collate the data and then just find the deltas between, you know, the weekly differences,
yeah.
etc. You know, it's like GitHub doesn't give you the ability to like, you know, go back in time,
yeah,
right, and just have that data recorded, right? If that was just something I was just wondering, because that would be a really, really good and powerful use case, like feature as well.
Right now, we can go back a year with the time series database, which, you know, I think if you were an enterprise client, we could definitely open something up to go back further than a year. But I think a year makes a lot of sense, because like a lot changes in a year. You know, and like going back
especially in open source.
Yeah. And I mean, like going back in the historical data,
like dog years.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Like you could go back, like if you said, like, I don't know, what did the Astro code base look like in 2017, or who was contributing? It might be fun for like a nostalgia, or like a, what is it, honey? What's the people that do documentaries? But like, I think for the day to day stuff,
dude, I would love an Astro doc. Oh my god,
you heard it here first.
Seriously,
yeah. But
yeah, I'd be interested in that as well.
Yeah, but I think for now, like we've kind of leaned on like 1 year of like real time data is like, it's like a good spot for most things, I think. And right now, like if you go to that page, we filter right now by 7 days, 30 days or 3 months. But I do like that. So like what the use case you'd be kind of looking for is like what happened this week and what happened 2 weeks later and compare kind of.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Pretty much like month on month. Yeah. Week on week kind of comparisons.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like, data is meant to drive insights, and the more insights you can deliver for your customers and your users,
yeah,
the more powerful your data-driven approach would become.
Yeah,
that's all I can say. That, and I wish you all the very best.
Oh, thanks.
That's awesome. I wanna give Toby a chance to respond if he has any thoughts, and then we'll go around and everyone kind of check my links out, and then we'll close it out here. If you have anything to add, Toby.
On the topic of like using open source as a way to develop like top 1% dev or something, I have so many like thoughts regarding that, because from my perspective, I'm of the opinion that like working or contributing in open source is not a bad thing, and I've actually seen now that, you know, after doing open source for a very long while, it's not a necessity really, but doing open source is definitely a good plus for you as a person, because it gives you the opportunity to work with several devs and you know, that stage to be able to connect with several people and you know, learn for yourself and improve as well is definitely a good plus. The ecosystem is very rich and supportive, so in that regard, people that are in open source will definitely get so many benefits from there. But it shouldn't be it shouldn't be a preamble, or it shouldn't be a reason for somebody to be expecting that, oh, I've done so much open source now. Where's my job? Where's my full-time remote job? Or something like that. Yeah, so I guess that's one thing that I just wanted to give my opinion on. And I also checked out open source. Shout out to open source and open source rather, and the entire team, V Doggy, Nick, Becca. You guys are doing really amazing work, open source. Yeah, shout out to JS Jam as well.
Awesome, man. Yeah, and for everyone out in the crowd, please smash those faces and start following. Let's do Fuzzy, Dev, and then Nick, if you want people to follow anything. Do you have anything, Fuzzy, you want to point people to?
Always Astro, right? Like, just check it out if you haven't. That's astro.build. Secondly, I'd follow what Toby said, just like, always bet on open source and never take anything for granted. Right.
Very cool. Dev, I believe you work for some sort of authentication company. Are you still here?
Do I? Yeah, I kind of do. Check out clerk.com or clerk.dev if you're building a JavaScript.
Or you mean clerk.dave?
Close enough. I wish. But yeah, if you're building a project, especially a JavaScript project, and you want auth to never be a problem for you, check out Clerk.
Awesome. And then Nikki T, you should pitch both open source and your stream.
Yeah, no, thanks again for having me on, Anthony. Yeah, if folks are interested, just check out opensauce.pizza. Go create a profile if you want. It's free and you can set up, do some highlights of stuff you've been doing in open source. Explore the platform. It's all open source. It's on GitHub @open-sauce. That's the org, and you can see all the repositories there. And yeah, if folks are interested, mainly stream on Twitch. You can go to nikkit.live. I stream on other places too. Like, I was on the cfe.dev YouTube this afternoon, actually streaming Astro, Fuzzy. So folks want to give a follow there. Aside from that, I do have to hop off now, but thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much. What's up, Toby?
Yeah, I was going to say that, like, actually I'm subscribed to Brian's newsletter. So I got the notification for when Nick was streaming. So I was like, wow, this is awesome. Nice one, Nick.
It's all connected, man. If I was Charlie, I could draw all these strings. I know all these people have been in all the places. So CEF is a good place to be. The Jamstack newsletter is a good newsletter to read. And please check out JavaScriptJam.com. We didn't talk about the newsletter at all, but that's probably okay. We have much better things to talk about. So thank you to Nikki and Becca for joining us. Thank you to Fuzzy. Thank you to Toby. Thank you to Dev. Really appreciate you guys jumping up. You make the show what it is. So good night, everyone.